I would like to thank the Chizuk Mission. You guys are amazing every single time. And really, it is something that is very special. The fact that you guys took a week off of your lives to come here to Eretz Yisrael and, you know, to invest, you know, financially, but more importantly, your time and your schedule and your families to come to Eretz Yisrael on Erev Shavuos. There's nothing going on in our lives. There's nothing to do, right? So on Erev Shavuos and coming back and to the race of preparing everything, it's not something that is simple, but it's something that makes you extraordinary. It's something that makes you very, very special. And as we always speak about, that it is Bizchus Nashim Tzidkanios that we have the Geula, and we're at a critical time in Jewish history. And therefore, there is no better time in which we need the women to really take achrayas onto the future of Am Yisrael. You know, in order to be successful, and women know this much better than men, anyone who wants to be successful in anything, you need to be able to plan at least a few weeks ahead. You have to be able to be thinking ahead. Where are we doing in the summer? I'm sure you guys all know where your kids are doing in the summer and where you're going, what this. And if you don't know, but you've already figured it out, or, you know, the beginning of the school year, of the next year, and the chasnas, where the men are a lot of times, like, they're focused in, like, right now, we got to do this. But in order to be successful, you have to be thinking weeks in advance. And that's why there's a mitzvah for every single Jew to count sfira. We have a goal. We have a destination. We have a Maimon Har Sinai. We got a certain light, an or on Pesach, and we're ready to go. We know where we're heading. We just need to make sure to work our way there. And there's work to be done. There's planning that needs to be done. When you make a chasna, some of you made chasnas, whether it's for kids, sometimes it's grandkids that are starting, there's a lot of planning. Usually, unless you're really, really organized, the week, also, Grandma, there's also gam vegam. No, gam vegam. I need to cover my bases. That's right. A week before the chasna, a lot of preparation goes in. All the final details. There's a month before and 2 months before, and we got to make sure we have the hall, we have the music, we have the this, we have that. But then we're getting ready. Getting ready for Shavuos is we need to make sure we're in the right frame of mind. But I want to take us to another place, because leaders don't just think weeks in advance. Jewish leaders are taught to think years ahead. Jubilee ahead. The Sanhedrin counts Shemitah years. 7 times 7 all the way to year 50. Where are we going to be in 50 years from now? Where are we going to be? I'll ask a simpler question. In 23 years from now, when Medinat Israel is going to be 100 years old. Where are we going to be? And 23 years is not such a big... It's right here. It's atat. Mashiach's going to be here. Is it something that's going to happen to us and we're just going to... You know, we'll get chizik, we'll go to some more shiurim, and then it will happen to us? Or is there something that we need to be doing also to partake in it? What is my job? What is my role? Am Yisrael has been through so much trouble, so many tzaros, so many klalos that we just read about in last week's parsha. How much more could we take? What could we do to stop it? There's still 58 hostages that we don't have them with us or their bodies with us. How long can we do this for? Rosh Chodesh Sivan is going to be day 600 from when the war broke out. 600 days.
Which day?
Rosh Chodesh on Wednesday. How much more can we take? And what about our own personal tzaras? Our challenges. The challenges of Parnassa, the challenges of Shalom Bayis, the challenges of raising the children, the challenges of marrying off the children, of the grandchildren, of the mother-in-laws, or the daughters-in-law and son-in-laws. Obviously, none of you have any of these troubles. I'm asking for a friend. Just asking for a friend. But the issues are real. The issues are very, very real. And that's what I want to address today. How could we actually look at our challenges head on and walk away from this week of Chizuk with a new outlook, how to look at our challenges, our personal challenges and Am Yisrael's challenges. I was just telling one of the ladies outside that me and my wife, we're at the point, you know, our kids are getting older and it's teenagers, and it's like,
so much fun.
until we got married in our earlier years, that was our personal journey. What I went through and where we went to high school, where we went to camp, and what challenges we had to deal with. And everyone had to deal with their own challenges. And even when we got married and we got a little bit more mature and we had to deal and start unlocking our own traumas that we never really dealt with, or our own baggage that we've been holding back from, I don't know from who, either from our teachers or from our parents or just from ourselves. So we dealt with it, and we're growing and we're advanced and we're moving. And like, this is my journey. I'm in control of my journey. But then starts a whole new level of journeys. Our kids start their journeys. And they need to deal with their trauma. And we need to face the fact that maybe we're part of their trauma, even though we didn't do necessarily anything wrong. But it's really hard on us. Because they're blaming us. They're not blaming us. They're saying it. They're not saying. We're blaming ourselves, even though they're not blaming it. And they're going on their journey, and we are like, and we have no control of the, it's our new journey. It's the journey that we need to take as adults, as parents, and we have no control over our self-work. They need to do the self-work. And we love them. And if they're in pain, we're in pain. And if they're successful, we get chias from it. How do we deal with that, Sarah? With that bracha? How do we deal with it? How do we deal when we can't control when the hostages are going to come back? It's not in our control. What tools do we have to make a change? That's what I want to address right now. I want us to finish this trip with real understanding of what is in our control. What changes we could make in our lives so that we could be more ready for Shavuos, and we could unlock the greatness of what this day has to offer. You wanted to add something?
Okay, right before you started, I got a text from somebody that said, one day your child will sit across from someone and explain to them what it was like to be raised by you. Make sure it's a story worth telling.
Excellent, excellent. And you know what? Sometimes it is a story worth telling, and it's sometimes we've done an unbelievable, exceptional job. And we don't give ourselves the credit for what we've done. We have set them up for success, but they still needed to go on their own journey. And that's part of our ability. What? And we're still to blame. The problem is that we blame ourselves. How do we change that? How do we change? And everyone has been through something. We've been through so much. Our kids have been through so much. How do we actually deal with it? Today is Yom Yerushalayim. Yom Yerushalayim for me on a personal level is an exciting day. My grandfather was born in the Old City. My father was born in Shaarei Chesed because my grandfather left the Old City when he got married to my grandmother, that she was born in Shaarei Chesed as well. She was already third generation in Shaarei Chesed. So my grandfather left the Old City before the war. But then when the Six-Day War broke out, he joined the Yerushalmi Brigade. Not a well-known brigade because there were yeshiva guys there. There was different. They came into the Old City after the paratroopers. I have a picture on my phone of my grandfather standing by the Kotel today on Yom Yerushalayim. Let me show you this picture. How many years ago was it? He came after Rav Gorin, but yes. Okay, let's see if we. This is a famous picture of my grandfather. This is my grandfather.
Standing by. Wow.
Standing by the Kotel.
She's taking pictures. I'll take a picture.
Take a picture. Send it to the group.
Wait, is that the original picture that everyone?
No.
No, it's this guy might have been on the. This is my grandfather right here in the middle. God. He's dominating like a baby by the Kotel. So it's a personal day for me, but I have a question for you, which we'll tie it into it at the end. What was the biggest day of Hashem's revelation in this world? Har Sinai. Where is Har Sinai today?
In the desert.
In the desert. We don't really know where Har Sinai is. Wouldn't we, or shouldn't we know where Har Sinai is?
He said it last time, Torah is everywhere.
Torah is everywhere, okay. But still, I want to go even deeper. Even though Torah is everywhere, we have places that we keep as a makom of Kedusha where we could connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is everywhere also, but we still have a mountain here in Yerushalayim called Har HaMoriah, which is still Kadosh today. Which we still get excited when my grandfather was there as a little child, as a baby, coming back home to Hashem's palace, to Yerushalayim, to Har HaMoriah. We have a place where we could actually physically go and feel Hashras HaShechina and feel closer and be more connected. And even though Hashem is everywhere, we still want to go to this one place. Wouldn't I think that Har Sinai, the place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually revealed himself to the highest level, that Ani Amarti Elohim Atem, we said Nasev and Nishma, we went to the level of Adam HaRishon Kodem HaChet at Har Sinai. We stood there, we were so ready, but where is it today? At least have a koil up there. Have something. Have trips to there. People are going on trips to Kivrei Tzadikim. But we can't go to Har Sinai. This was the place of Ashras HaShechina.
It's not about the place. Wherever we are, Hashem is giving us the Torah in our own.
It's true. The Torah is everywhere, and it's not about the place. And by the way, you know what made Har HaMoriah special? What was there? They're in the Aron, in Kodesh HaKadoshim, the holiest place for Am Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, on Har HaMoriah. What was inside there? Was the Luchos. Meaning there is a physical place where we can actually go and reconnect to Maimon Har Sinai, and because the holiest place, what made it so holy, was that there is Luchos there. Hashem's gift to us that was etched in Shemaim and brought down to us, that is the Kedusha. It's the values that it represents. I agree with you. It's the Torah. It's the values that we carried with us. But at the end of the day, there was a physical place where we could go and connect to it. But it's not Har Sinai. It's Yerushalayim. Why is it not Har Sinai? Why is it Yerushalayim? What makes Yerushalayim better than Har Sinai? Question number one. Question number two. The Gemara says, I'm going to quote you a Gemara in Megillah, Daf Lamed Aleph, Amud Beis, 31b. Tanya, Reb Shimon ben Elazar Omer. Ezra tikin lehem liYisrael shiyu korin klalo shebetoras kohanim kodem atzeres v'shebemishnah Torah kodem Rosh Hashanah. Ezra was metakein that you would read the klalos, the curses, the challenges that Am Yisrael is going to face before Rosh Hashanah and also before Shavuos. We just read it this past Shabbos. We read all of the curses that Am Yisrael are going to endure. My taima, why? Amar Abaye v'item Rish Lakish, kedei, famous line. If you read the curses, the year and its challenges will be over. Our national challenges and our personal challenges will be over if you read the curses. First of all, how does that work? Why by reading the curses, my curses will be over? And second of all, I understand Rosh Hashanah. Tichle Shana v'kilosel, let the year and its curses end. What about Shavuos? Shavuos is a new year. Tichle Shana, let the year and its curses be over. The Gemara asks this question. I understand Rosh Hashanah, it's a new year. What about Shavuos? Shavuos is not a new year. What does the Gemara say? Shavuos is also Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah for what? Says the Gemara, Rosh Hashanah leperos ha'ilan, for the fruits of the tree. That's the Gemara's answer. So because it's also known as Rosh Hashanah, therefore, we also read the curses right beforehand. Where is it called Rosh Hashanah? It's a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah that says that there's Arba'a Rashei Shana Yesh. There's four Rosh Hashanahs. Arba'a Prakim Ha'olam Nidon. BePesach HaLatvua Shavuos, we have the fruits. Sukkis, we have rain. We get judged for all three of those things. And Rosh Hashanah, it's humanity. So Rosh Hashanah, I understand it's a new year. But Shavuos is also a new year. It's a new year for the fruits. That's Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat is for the trees. But Rosh Hashanah, LePeiros HaIlan, is Shavuos. Okay, what about Tu B'Shvat? That's also Rosh Hashanah. What about Pesach? We get judged for the grains. What about Shavuos? What about Sukkot? We get judged for the water. What's the Gemara teaching us? What's so special about Shavuos? And I want to go in to understand and unlock the unbelievable potential we have this week in preparing for this day of Shavuos and understanding why it's specifically Rosh Hashanah and Shavuos. These two holidays are so unique that they could transform our lives entirely. And we're going to go into a Rashi that actually gets a little bit Kabbalistic on us. And he's explaining to us something that is very, very profound. The Gemara says that on Pesach, we give a special karban so that we could have hatzlacha in what we get judged on. We get judged on the grains of the ground. So what karban do we bring on Pesach? Omer. Omer is from the grain, it's barley. On Sukkot, we get judged for the water. So what special offering do we bring that has to do with water? Simchas b'Shoeva, ushavtemayim b'sason mimaynei Yeshua nisuch hamayim. It's special nisuch hamayim. That's why we have Simchas b'Shoeva. Hashoeva, we draw up the water every single night. On Sukkot, on Shavuos, we get judged for the fruits of the tree. Therefore, what special carbon offering do we bring on Shavuos? I would have thought Bikurim, but instead it says Lechem Aponim. What is Lechem Aponim made out of?
Wheat.
What is wheat? Is that a fruit or is that a grain? It's a grain. I thought we're getting judged by the fruits of the tree. Why are we bringing down Lechem HaPanim that is made out of grains? Rashi alludes to this, and he says it very, very short. And he says, this must be Rav Yehuda Letameh. There's a discussion in another Gemara. What was the fruit tree? When we say Peros HaIlan, that it's Rosh Hashanah for the fruits of the tree, what tree are we talking about? The tree, Eitz Hadas. What was the tree that Adam and Chava ate from? So first of all, I just want to make sure that there's one disclaimer. It was definitely not an apple tree. Not in Jewish sources. I have not found a Jewish source of apple. We're going to go back to something that we've discussed if you were here before. If you weren't, it's okay. We're going to unlock it, but then we're going to add many more new layers on it. Okay? There's a discussion in the Gemara. You can look it up inside. It's also in different Midrashim. The Gemara is on that in Brachos, Mem Amud Aleph, Brachos 40a. The Gemara has three different opinions in this Gemara. Opinion number one, the fruit tree that Adam and Chava ate from was grapes. Because every time man planted or got involved with a grape tree, he messed up. Lot messed up, Noach messed up, they got drunk, they got a little bit too excited. It wasn't good. It must have been a grape tree. That's one shita. Another shita is that it was a fig tree. Why a fig tree? Because the tree that they sinned in was the tree that they fixed themselves up in. What did they cover themselves in? Fig leaves. So it must have been a fig tree. But Rabbi Yehuda says that it was a wheat tree. What does that mean that it was a wheat tree? What is a wheat tree? Says the Medrash, and Rashi brings it down also. Says the Medrash, Ma haya oso ilan she'achol menu Adam v'chava. Rav Meir says it was chitim. Could it be chitim? Efshar chitim ayu? Amar lohein. Amar lo v'aksiv eitz. It says it was a tree. It wasn't grains. It was a tree. Amar lo matmeros hayu ke'arze levanon. Says the Mefarish, Ala lemale ketamar zu. Ulekach az nikru pre-eit ulaachar chet nisma'eit komaso achenase ke pre-adama. It used to be a tree that had fresh challahs on it. Ladies, Erev Shabbos dream. You go outside, you pick your challah, you put it in the oven to warm it up so you have good smell in the house. You don't have to work hard. And it's not just a dream for the ladies. It's a dream for all of the farmers. All of the process of making an actual loaf of bread. You know, it's months. It's a years of planning, of plowing the seeds and letting them grow and then harvesting them and then crushing them and dividing them and sifting them. And it's Sidura de Paz, all the Melacha Shabbos. Explains the Medrash. Adam Arishon, his curse was Bezei Asapecha Tocha Lechem. It wasn't just a curse on the man that now he has to, by the sweat of your brow, you're going to eat bread. It was the curse was on the tree. The tree went from a tree of bread to grain. It lost its, and we know that Peros HaIlan are on a higher level bracha-wise than the Adama. It lost its level. What happens on Shavuos? When we want it to be Rosh Hashanah, Leperus Ha'ilan of a new year, the Perus Ha'ilan are talking about that original tree. We have the ability to fix the tree that went down into grain and turn it back into pre-Ha'ilan, into fruits of the tree. And it happened once on the day of Shavuos. The day that Am Yisrael stood by Maamad Har Sinai, says the Medrash, Ani Amarti Elohim Atem. They said, Nasev and Nishma, they were connected, Ke'ish Echad B'Leiv Echad, they were connected to the source of the Neshama, they were connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all of their sicknesses went away. Because we weren't attached to the guf, we were attached to the neshama. We were like Adam Arishon Kodem Achet. We weren't going to die, we were going to live. We have the luchos from Hashem, luchos rishonos, and we're going to go straight into Eretz Yisrael, and that's going to be Yemos HaMashiach. Chaya Olam Haba in this world. That's where we were. Unfortunately, they sinned at the Chet HaEgel, and that threw us back. And that's what needed us to give us the second luchos, Tor Shebaal Peh, Tor Shebichsav, and back to the tsaros that we have, as Rashi says, every single gullus that we have a little bit of the kapara of the Chet HaEgel that Am Yisrael did. But on this day, and this is what's brought down in the Yerushalmi, the koach of Shavuos and the koach of Rosh Hashanah are very similar. Rosh Hashanah, we have the ability to restart our life again. It's a new year resolutions. What is my life going to look like this coming year? And Shavuos, we have an opportunity to fix our mistakes of the past as if we have never sinned. Says the Yerushalmi, the Korbanos of Rosh Hashanah and the Korbanos of Shavuos are different in their text, just slightly. By Rosh Hashanah, it doesn't say the word vihikravtem, it says ve'asisem, amar lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mikevan shenichnastem ledin lefanei b'Rosh Hashanah v'yatzasem b'shalom, male ani aleichem ki'ilu nivrasem b'riya chadasha. On Rosh Hashanah, if you bring the offerings, you go to shul, you're like a new person. This is the Medrash, the Yerushalmi in Rosh Hashanah Perek Dalet. And on Shavuos, ein ksiv chet, amar lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mikevan shekibaltem aleichem ol Torah, male ani aleichem ki'ilu lo chatasem miyameichem. It's as if you've never sinned. The koach of Shavuos, of 1 week from today, 1 week from today, on Monday, is in a certain way even higher than Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, it's as if we're starting new, and so many times we've needed to start new in our lives, a new relationship with our kids, new relationships with ourselves. But imagine you could get to the place that by doing a certain thing, Kabbalah Satorah, understandings, a deep concept, it actually changes as if we have never sinned. It's not starting the relationship again, how many times we've started the reset button. It's actually going back and strengthening the actual relationship as if we've never fought, as if we've never had a challenge, as if we've never had hardship. How do we do that? How do we do that? We do it by reading the klalos before and the klalos after. The klalos before Shavuos and the klalos before Rosh Hashanah. How does that help us? How does that help us? What does that give us? How do we connect to Yerushalayim through that? Imagine there's a kid. He's playing ball on the street. You told him don't play ball on the street. But he's there with his friends playing on the street, on the sidewalk, and the ball rolls into the street. It's a Sakonis Nefashos. Somebody's walking by. He honks the horn. He says, hey, kid, get off the street. It's dangerous. He goes back to the sidewalk. He's playing. The ball rolls into the street again. Another adult walks by, and he says, hey, what are you doing over there? Get out of the street. It's dangerous. Okay, he comes out, he's playing again on the side, ball rolls into the street again. Another adult walks by, but this adult goes into the street, grabs him by the hand to the sidewalk, smacks him on the arm. What are you doing? You could have gotten killed. It's a sakana. It's dangerous. Who loves this child the most? The one who hit him. Who is the one who hit him? It's his father. It's the kid's father, who really loves him and doesn't want him to go off course and get hit by a truck. Chas v'shalom. He pulled him out of there. And he said, you're going off course. It's a sakana. Hits him on the hand. So that the kid will learn. Will the kid make mistakes again? He might make mistakes again. But over time, he's able to understand what is the best way to act. He's able to protect himself. He's able to stand on his own two feet. Reading the klalos is not you're going to get punished if you do this. Reading the klalos, the word that repeated itself over and over again in this week's parsha was the word that's called bris. It's a covenant between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a relationship. Upanisi aleichem, virbesi eschem, vakimosi es brisi itchem. You want to undo my covenant. I'm going to remember the covenant. We are tied. We're a family. We have a relationship. We signed a contract, a ksuba, when we stood under Har Sinai. Just less than a month ago, Iris Chaim came to speak in my brother's shul in Ra'anana. My brother has a shul in Ra'anana. I live here in Shari Chesed. Iris Chaim is the mother of Yotam Chaim. Yotam Chaim was one of the three hostages that was taken on October 7th, and he had a red hair. And unfortunately, he was killed by friendly fire of Tzal. Became very, very famous. It wasn't Russian. By mistake.
Yeah.
The story was, he's a kid who lived on Kfar Aza. He was struggling himself. He had certain, his own mental challenges. But he was a good kid. He was a drummer. He was a fun kid. For 3 weeks, she didn't know what was if he was alive, if he was dead. She said she stopped listening to the news. It was just too hard for her.
But she told us that she forgives them.
So let me tell you the full story. Because she spoke her process from her side. That's what I want to go into. We know the story from the outside. I want to look at the story from the inside. We have what to learn from her curses and maybe take a little bit to our challenges. So she says, the first few weeks, I didn't know what was going on. I decided not to listen to the news. And then I heard that he was kidnapped. But then we found out a few weeks later that he was able to escape in one of the bombings of one of the houses. He was able to run away from his captives. And he's running between rubble. And he's surviving for 3 days on almost nothing. And he's leaving different signs for Tzahal that I'm here. And then the worst thing happens. Everyone is waiting for a glimpse of hope. Maybe Tzahal can rescue hostages. Maybe this could change the momentum of the entire war. It was before even the first deal. There's momentum going on. They're going in there. They're good. And three hostages get killed by our forces, by other Jewish soldiers. Devastating. Broke the entire country. She gets the knock on the door. It broke her. She says, I was broken. Shattered. Why me? Why me? Why is this happening to me? Why him? Why my child? Why all these sorrows? And she found herself, after a day of very hard questions, because she's a therapist herself, she said, I'm asking the questions of a victim. And this is what I do with my clients. I can't stay in a victim mentality. I won't be able to get out of it. So you know what she did? She said, I went into my child's room and I took his chair. She said, I sat in his chair. She went and she sat down in the chair. And she said, this is like an exercise she does with her clients. And she said, I pretended like I'm Yotam. And I asked him, tell me what happened to you. And then she started speaking as if she's her son. And she said, Ma, you wouldn't believe it. I was kidnapped. It was terrible. It was hard. But this entire time, I didn't give up. And I held my head high. And I didn't let them break me. And when I had a chance, I ran away from them. And then I survived, and I was using every ounce of strength that I had and intelligence and courage that you taught me to fight so that I could come and find the soldiers. And I found the soldiers. But unfortunately, it didn't work. But you should be proud of me because I got killed as a Jew, by myself as a free person, and not in the hands of those terrorists and murderers. And therefore you should be, this is what she told herself, was the story of her son, talking to her. She said, I reframed the entire story, and it gave me so much strength as a mother to understand that my son, that had a whole life of challenges, was a superhero. Was a hero. A hero that could be remembered, that is part of the story of the Jewish people. And she said, that's what gave me the strength to sit down through Shiva. But then she said, I got a message, a WhatsApp message from a wife of the commander of the unit. And again, it's the women. They have so much koyach. She said, my husband and his unit are broken. They can't go out to war. They're embarrassed to leave the house. They gave them a two-day rest, but they don't know if they could go back. They killed another Jew, which was our mission to bring them back. How can we go back to war? Could you do something? Could you leave a message? This is my husband's phone number. She said again, she said, in Shiva, you don't leave your house. Even as someone who is not from here in Israel, they keep Shiva. They know what's going on. But she said, I had to leave my own tzara so that I could help and understand that it's Am Yisrael's tzara. Because the entire country was devastated. She said, I physically left my house. I went to the park and I stood there for an hour, just like thinking and understanding that I have to leave my own avelus and think about Am Yisrael's avelus. And that's where I left him a message. You should know I'm not upset at you in the park. This is Iris Chaim, the mother of Yotam. We're not upset at you. You didn't kill my son. Hamas killed my son. They're the ones who kidnapped him. They're the ones who put us into this situation. And I love you and I want you to come and give me chizik and I'll give you chizik. And you guys are the heroes. And please come. And five of the soldiers came with their mefaked to give her chizik. She gave them a hug. They gave her a hug. They were hugging. They were crying. They went through the tzara together, but they gave each other strength. She was able to leave her own tzara. She was able to reframe the story to understand that there's a covenant. This didn't happen stam. And they were able to go back to war. And she said, the part that people don't know, besides her own personal journey, inner journey, to reframe what's going on, she said almost a year later, it was over a year later, she gets a call from this commander again. And she said, Iris, I want to give you a personal thank you for giving us the courage and the strength to go back to war. Because our unit is the unit that is responsible for killing Sinwar. Her chizuk to throw them back to war is what killed Yimach Shemo v'Zichro, the biggest enemy and terrorist connected the Jews since Hitler, Yimach Shemo. Because she had an ability to look at her challenges straight in the face, not to run away from them, not to wash them over, but to deal with them. And to understand that I'm in the control of the story that I tell myself, and not an imaginary story, a real story. A story that is able to understand that whatever tzara I'm going through is actually here to strengthen my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we're young children, we don't understand it. Why did my father give me a patch? But as we grow older and we look back at our challenges, we're able to understand this was a loving father who wanted everything best for me. And sometimes I was making mistakes and he was trying to save me. So he gave me a patch here, he gave me a patch there. But it's here to strengthen my relationship with my loving Father in heaven. I just came back from New York. Literally landed and came straight here.
Welcome home.
Thank you. In New York, Thursday morning, I met Omer Shemtov and his mother, Shelley, and his father. They were there for the Israel Day Parade on Sunday, and they were doing a small event in the city. I could show you, it was my daughter's 17th birthday on Thursday. And she has been davening for him. You know, everyone like took one soldier. So in the Jerusalem Marathon, we live next to Gan Sakar, in the Jerusalem Marathon, a year and a half ago, almost, yeah, a year and a half ago. So we went down at the end of the marathon to say hello to some people. There was a hostage tent, and they were giving out candles with different names. And she took one, and she had Omer Shem Tov. That became her chaya. She's been davening for him and praying for him for a year and a half. I have a video on my phone. I got him to send her a bracha, and he was saying thank you to her for davening for me. Unbelievable. Unbelievable chizik. She got all emotional. She.
I started davening for him. As soon as word came out that the person that he had been held captive with said that he was keeping Shabbos, he wasn't using the flashlight, and anything else he could do, kashrus, whatever he could do, he had a kadosh baruch hu in his life, but it was no accident because he had a special
life. That's right. Itai Regev was, when he came out after 55 days, he said that we were together, and that was the story that his mother said, that they got like a small bottle of grape juice because they were giving them some water and juice, and used to make kiddush on the cap and then pour back in so that they could have it. And they took the salt off the little pretzels so that they could dip their one pita that they divide into four so that he could have a little bit of a sense of challah. This is someone who didn't necessarily... So they had a tradition. They had a grandfather who was, you know, more traditional and more connected and did it more often. It's not necessarily part of their life. And now the worst of the worst is happening to him. But in the worst challenges, he's able to find an unbelievable, unwavering, unbroken bond with Hashem and with his own identity. And he said this story. He said, I was held sometimes in this tunnel. There was times it was a tiny tunnel where I couldn't even stretch out my arms and my legs, and it's dark walls, and we couldn't even see the shadow of our hands. But every day I woke up and I said, Modani. Thank you, Hashem, that I'm still alive. Thank you, Hashem, that I'm here. Thank you, Hashem, that I have parents. He found what to say thank you. He said, that's what gave me strength. Every day I would have to come up with different ideas of what am I saying thank you for, but every day I said thank you. Where does a kid who was 19 years old get koach to do this? And he said one day, and listen to this, said it was already like deeper into the battles, we're already in a nicer place, Tzal came in, Tzal left because there was a break. So they left for a little, for like 2 months when they were releasing, whether it was the first time. And they came up to him, they found a pamphlet with a lot of Hebrew letters. And it looked like paper, like newspaper papers. But it wasn't a newspaper. It was a special, like, heading. The heading was called Dvar Malchut. Dvar Malchus is a pamphlet that Chabad gives out to its soldiers. It's very, like, very flimsy, but it's got a lot of writing in it. No pictures, just writing. It's got, like, the Parsha, and it's got Pirushim, it's got the Rebbe's Torah, it's got some Zohar. Every week they have a little booklet. So they came to him, they found different, but whatever the Chayalim left behind, they found this pamphlet was lost in one of the houses because they take over a house. They brought this to him and they put it on the table and said, read this to us. What are the army secrets in this pamphlet? They thought it was an army pamphlet. He looks at it and he starts reading it a little bit and he starts laughing. He said, this is not an army pamphlet. This is Parashat HaShavua. It's got the parsha of the week's parsha and it's got different pirushim and explanations. They said, we don't believe. They took it. I don't know if they brought it to another hostage or not. He decided, I want that back. He said, I want it back. You can't have it. I'm not going to eat until you give it back to me. I want that back. It's my story. Eventually, he got it back. And he kept on reading it every day. What was the pamphlet that he got? It was the story of Yosef in the pit. And how he's in the pit. But in the bar, he kept on like checking out on other people. He smelled the good besamim. He's sold by his brothers as a slave. He's in a dungeon for years. And what he's thinking about, oh, it smells good here. It must be that Hashem is with me. That's what you saw? You didn't see that your brothers hate you and that Hashem sold you and that you're a teenager and that you're being thrown into Egypt surrounded by Arabs and everything is going bad for you and you have to work for other people and you're being abused and molested. Oh, but it smells good. How could I help other people around here? But he kept on reading that story because the end of that story was that in one day, he was out of the jail, they washed him, they gave him a haircut, and he was standing in front of the king of that time, in front of Paro. And on Thursday morning, this week, he told the people who were gathered around, I kept on trying to get chizik and finding the moments of inspiration that were good, that I could say thank you for. And you know what happened to me? I was released. The day I was released, I took a shower, I got a haircut, I got cleaned up. Within 48 hours, I was standing next to the President of the United States of America, the King of the modern world, next to President Trump. He said, it was my story. But I knew it was my story before I even knew it was my story. Or I hoped it would be my story. Unbelievable. We have an ability to look at the klalos, to look at the curses, to look at our challenges, whether it's our own personal journeys or our children's journeys, which is really our own new journey. And what are we seeing? Are we seeing klalos? Or are we seeing the bris that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking to us and is trying to make us better and to find the good points and to restructure the story and to reframe it, and that we have the ability to understand that we have something very, very special here. If we are mekabel on ourselves, old Torah, understanding that I'm a Jew and that I have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I have a covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it can reframe everything. That's why the Haftorah that we're going to read this week of Parshas Bamidbar, right before Shavuos, something that your husbands, that the men say every single day when they put on tefillin. When we put on tefillin, we wrap the tefillin around our finger three times. It's sort of like three engagement rings to remind us of the covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the way, most men don't even know that. So you could tell them that. Is there an engagement ring for men in Judaism? They get their engagement ring with Hashem at 13. And what do they say? Three times, three different psukim from this week's Haftorah. Ve'erastich li le'olam. I'm going to have a covenant with you forever. Erastich is like erusin, but it's also like, I don't know the right word. It's like cleave, a bond, forever. Ve'erastich li betzedek uve'mishpat uve'chesed uve'rachamim. And I'm going to have that bond, that engagement, that connection with justice. When things are fine, it's chesed, it's rachamim, it's tzedek and mishpat. We're doing everything accordingly. But then there's also times of darkness where we don't understand anything. We also have that bond of emunah. Again, I was zochet to be at a Suda Soda at Abba and Pamela Kleinman's house. It was with Agam Berger. 2 weeks after she was out. She's sitting there with her parents, or a week and a half after she was out. Parents are holding her hand the whole time, the whole meal. But she's telling us her story. I'm sitting across the table from her. And everyone knows her line, "Bederech emunah bacharti." A young girl. Where did they get that strength? But over and over again, we're finding stories of people who are finding strength in the darkest of time. That covenant is getting stronger and stronger with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's going across the world. And we need to bring it into our families. They get it from their DNA. But what about us? Does it have to be so extreme, Chas v'Shalom, in order for us to find, rekindle that emunah and that inner strength, our own struggles? And we get caught up with a lot of different things. And we all have our issues that we need to deal with. That's okay. But can we find light and hope and strength inside that whole turmoil? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a letter, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah. I always like to give this mashal of the soul. I explained this actually to soldiers who came and they were asking, like, what is Talmud Torah? So I gave them the Torah is you have to learn in order to know what to do. It's instructions for life. How to have a better relationship, better marriage, how to live your life. We have, like, it's designed for success. Like Shabbos is like there built in for our professional and personal success. But I explained to them also, like, a soldier goes away and he's away for 3-4 months. And he gets a letter from his wife, a written letter, like they used to do back in the day, not just a WhatsApp message. And she wrote, oh, I miss you so much. I love you so much. Our daughter just took her first steps. What does he do when he gets that physical letter? Does he read it? Oh, that's so nice. And then he crumples it up and throws it out in the garbage? He keeps it. And at night, he opens, he takes it out of his pocket and he rereads the letter. Why is he rereading the letter? He already knows what it says. But he rereads it. Why is he rereading it? And then he reads it again. Every night, he rereads the letter. When he's out in battle and fire is coming in and they need to attack, he holds it tight one more time. And he says, I'm going. And he's ready to go. What's he doing with that letter? It's just a letter. That letter gives him hope. That letter represents what life is about. That letter represents his life, his love, his connection. Every time he reads it, he's connecting back to the person who wrote him the letter, the love of his life. That's what his life is all about. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the letter. And we read it again and again. We know what it says, but every year we read the letter again and again. You know what the concept of staying up Shavuos night all night? Who stays up all night talking to somebody else all night without stopping? Maybe Chizuk Mission women. Even they collapse at a certain point. When you were dating, try to go back there. I remember it was the night before, the night that I proposed. Maybe I'm not supposed to say this out loud. The night that I proposed, so you have to bring the Kala or the girl back to her house. But we just ended up staying awake outside on the bench that's outside the house. And we spoke, and suddenly I'm like, oh my goodness, it's the break of dawn. I have to go to Shachris. But why does that, we don't stay up Shavuos night because we have to, and we're drinking coffee because I got to stay up, and our children are, all right. Give it over to your children. That we stay up because we're excited. One night a year, it's the night of our engagement, the night of our wedding. That's what our anniversary night is about. We're just excited to read that love letter again and again. The love with Hashem. It's our marriage with Hashem. It's understanding, it's reframing our reality. And when we're able to reframe our reality, and with this I'm going to conclude because Ben is giving me the sign. When we're able to reframe our reality, to look at our challenges straight in the face and understand that it's our ability to understand that this is a covenant, it's supposed to bring us into action. And this is the final nekuda, which I think is so important for women. You know why we don't have a kolal or a Beis HaMikdash in Har Sinai, and we do have it in Yerushalayim? There's one fundamental chiluk. And I'll bring it out from another question. When I drink a cup of water, what is the bracha achrona on a cup of water? Bore nefashos. When I eat fruit, what's the bracha? I eat the fruit of Shivas Aminim. What's the bracha that they make? I make an alam ich ala eitz, which is bracha achas mein shalosh. Also when I eat cake. When I eat bread, that bread that now we have to work so hard to make, it's no longer. What bracha do we make? Hamotzi and birchas hamazon. Right? Any of you know like benchophobia?
Yeah.
Right? You don't want to wash because you have benchophobia. It takes too long. Why is it that from water, which is it's like fleshophobia. Because you want to have your coffee and your ice cream. So it's like, right? Those are the two things that religious Jews have a phobia for. Right? Why is it that water, which is a gift from Hashem, you're hiking up north, you're thirsty, there's fresh water, you could take a cup, you could drink it directly, you have such a short thank you to Hashem. But when you have bread, you have such a long thank you, Hashem. That you have benchophobia, but you have to sit there for like almost 5 minutes to say thank you. Ala Aretz, Ala Mazon, on Yerushalayim. Why? Is it that bread is more important, sustains us? You can't live without water. You could live without bread. Water is more important than bread. So why do...
The process is longer.
There's a fundamental concept in Judaism. When we are partners with Hashem, the actual thing has more kedusha than when we get a direct gift from Hashem. If I get a gift from Hashem, like the water, I didn't do anything. Hashem gave it to me. It has kedusha, I have to say a bracha, but it's lower kedusha than if I was a partner in creating the kedusha with Hashem. We find this in Yerushalayim, we find this in Eretz Yisrael. Kedusha Rishona, the first kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, wherever we went, there was the Aron Bris Hashem. The wars were miraculous. It was kadosh for 400, for more. It was Kadosh for 1,000 years until the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Jews are into exile. There is no longer Kedusha Sa'aretz. For those 70 years, there is no Shemitah. There is no Trumas and Maestros. It was like any other country. We lost Kedusha Sa'aretz Yisrael. Kedusha Shnia, Kitcha L'Shaita V'Kitcha L'Asad Lavo. The Kedusha is still until today, even though we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. Because the way we got the Kedusha was wherever we settled. Wherever we built homes and communities. We were partners in making the Kedusha a reality on the ground. Therefore, the Kedusha lasts. It's the same thing, by the way, with learning. You could hear a great shiur. It's amazing. You heard it. But if you worked on preparing a shiur ever, and you worked on the Maor Mekomos, and then you gave the shiur, which shiur remains with you longer? The one that you prepared. It may not be this, wow, you heard this amazing Gadol and Talmud Chacham. You heard unbelievable Torah from him. It might have been on a higher level than what you prepared, but because you prepared it yourself, your partner in connecting to the Torah, it's yours. It stays with you forever. It stays with you. That is the fundamental lesson of Judaism. Maimed Har Sinai was the greatest revelation of God in this world. But what did we do the night before to make it happen? We went to sleep. We were not partners in creating that Kedusha. Yerushalayim, on the other hand, we were partners with Hashem in making it a reality on the ground. Hashem tells Nasan HaNavi to tell David, where is HaMakom Asher Bachar Hashem? And then David needs to conquer the city, and he needs to buy it from the Yavusi, and he needs to establish it, and needs to build it, and Shlomo HaMelech needs to build it, and the poor people get involved, and they're the ones who build it. Which is why the Mishkan, by the way, the Mishkan was never destroyed. The Mishkan was nignaz. It was taken apart. The Mishkan that was built, I'm not talking about Mishkan Shiloh, but the Mishkan that was built by Moshe Rabbeinu and the women who sewed and prepared everything, it was all nignaz. Because if Am Yisrael prepared something, it's always going to be there. Nignaz mean that it was hidden away in the tunnels under the first Beis HaMikdash by Shlomo HaMelech, and that's where the Aron is as well. It was never taken captive. When we are partners with Hashem, the Kedusha lasts. If we want to have a covenant with Hashem, we need to become partners with Hashem. If we want Mashiach to come and the Kedusha to last, it's not something that's going to happen to us. And we are just going to continue what we're doing, and then God will bring it down, and it will be a gift from Hashem. Hashem wants the Kedusha of Mashiach, of Yemos HaMashiach, to be embedded within our souls and to stay Kedusha le'asad lava forever. And the way to do that is that we are partners with Hashem. We're partners with Hashem by learning His Torah. We're partners with Hashem by loving every single Jew, ke'ish echad b'leiv echad. We're partners with Hashem by looking at our challenges and seeing that every klala that someone might have experienced in their lives is actually a reminder of the covenant that we have with Hashem. If we're able to look at our personal challenges and our national challenges with that lens, if we're able to say, what small thing could I do in my acceptance of Torah a little bit higher? I just finished an unbelievable week here. A week of inspiration, a week of growth. What is one small thing that I'm taking to my family when I come back? And start thinking about it, because in a minute I'm going to have you share it with somebody who's sitting next to you. What small thing am I taking with me to my family? What small thing am I taking with my family? Not in a way that you're an overbearing mother and mother-in-law. I came back. I'm all inspired. Something small that you want for yourself that will just shine to your family. It's not something that you're making your family do, but it's something that you're taking on yourself. Friday night, just to give you an example, and my kids know this, we've already ingrained it in them, and every kid needs to share one amazing thing that happened to them that week that they have a karsa toto for, and one mitzvah that they did. Those are the two mazers. Every person find your own thing, but are you becoming a partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What is your partnership with Hashem? Yeah. What are you doing that is active? If you become a partner with Hashem, you will reframe the way you take in your challenges. What is one aspect that you're more committed to the Torah? And what is another element that you're more committed to another Jew? That you're thinking about another Jew? Inspiration without traction, it can be fleeting. It slips away and we go back into our routine. Inspiration without traction, without making it real, that it's real, that it hits the surface, that it hits your... If it's... Ke'anan cholef. My wife had a friend of hers, great girl, from the Five Towns.
Thank you.
Yes, amazing girl. And she came over to our house on Pesach. And my wife, at the end, she told me, she said that she turned to her and she said, I noticed that you weren't wearing nail polish for Yontif. You always wear nail polish. You wear nail polish every Shabbos. How come you didn't wear nail polish? So this girl told her friend from high school, she said, since October 7th, I decided to do one thing that's small because nail polish is important for me and I haven't worn nail polish. I said, wow, that's not a small thing. That's major, because it's been almost 2 years that she's not wearing. And for her, it was important. And if it's something that's so important, I don't know if I could give that up. But she did something that she felt she could do to be nosa ba'ol with the sorrows of somebody else. And that small thing reminded her that we're still in the middle of something. She was thinking about another Jew. Is there a small thing that we could do that is keeping us thinking? Now, don't take on things that you can't do and you don't have to. Everyone can do different things. But the point of this whole chizik mission is to give us the chizik and the tools to take it back into our lives. And I'm going to reiterate it again. It's not to take it back to everyone else's lives, that I'm now the mashgiach of everyone else around me. You guys all need to get chizuk. It's to take it into my life. And if I've grown a little bit more, I communicate with people around me differently. I communicate with a more positive lens. I'm able to look at the challenges in the eyes and reframe them. I'm able to be more positive, more appreciative. I'm able to be a little bit softer. I'm able to deal with different challenges in a different way. And that resonates. That spills over. And there's a koach that a mother has, that a woman has, that it just like changes everything around them. And that's the bracha I want to give to you. I want to give to you that you walk away from this week of chizuk tremendously inspired, ready for the most important day in the Jewish calendar, that it takes us 7 weeks to prepare for it. This is the beginning of the last week of preparation. Taken every single day, we're preparing for that wedding. It's the day that it's as if we've never sinned. It's the day that if we approach it, it's tikkun chet adam arishon. We could be metakin the original sin. We could be metakin our original sins. We could go back as if we've never sinned. We could rebuild and restructure certain things like we've never imagined, if we understand that all of the challenges that led us to here are just there to remind us that we have this bond, to relook at it, to be dedicated to ourselves, to Torah, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to that love letter, to read it again and again, to understand if I got a patch, it's from my loving Father in heaven. And when I look at it this way, and I take upon myself one small thing, it's going to transform my whole life.